the other side of it, though, is further, I also recognize that there are other so-called paranormal modalities out there that there probably is substance to. Now, on the other hand, in some ways, ironically, I've become more skeptical about claims that people make. Because when I see the wild claims people make about remote viewing, when I know what's true about it, and then when I see people make wild claims about UFOs or about, well, cryptozoology, for example, and stuff, generally I've come to where I can recognize whether there's some substance to a claim, whether there isn't, just by the way it's presented.
And there's two, at least two and probably more sides to that issue. You mentioned other realities in a way about UFOs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if a guy really believes in this thing, for instance, like a UFO or being able to go to Mars and see life, I guess maybe that has some sort of impact on your psychic anyway.
Well, it probably does, and I actually was going to mention UFOs. I'm glad you brought that up. One thing that I have come to believe is that there really is, I have other reasons for this as well, but my remote viewing has kind of helped me come to terms with the fact that there really is something going on in UFO, this UFO phenomena, that I really am convinced that there is some kind of intelligent life involved in this, and that it is extraterrestrial in some sense of that word. There's a number of ways that could be, right? Although I have to say I already had some reason to accept it in that, or at least that there's intelligent life on other planets. I like to joke that I belong to the only Christian denomination that actually believes as a matter of doctrine that there is life, intelligent life on other planets. That's one thing people aren't aware of. I'm a Mormon, and there's a tenet in Mormonism that believes that that God created intelligent life on other planets as well. And that's been a doctrinal point for almost 200 years now. So that made it a little easier, to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also recognize that a lot of what's said about UFOs just isn't true. You hear a lot of stories, a lot of speculation, a lot of
What throws up a red flag when somebody says something about UFOs that you just don't believe is true at all?
Well, when they start talking about, I almost hesitate to get into this because I'm probably going to make somebody mad. But when they start talking about, I don't know, the Pleiadians, for example, you start digging into the source for their information. If they're getting it from like channeled entities and stuff, I find that very dubious. If their source is not really anything that seems concrete, I'm dubious. A lot of the actual observations I think are legitimate. People talk about seeing things and they describe them in pretty good detail, and they are credible folks. I think they probably are seeing something legitimate. Even one of my brothers had a UFO observation that doesn't seem the way he described it could at all possibly have been any kind of aircraft or anything. It sounded like it had to be something outside of our realm of knowledge. And he is absolutely
where did
not
he see
UFO.
This thing?
Actually, driving up through the middle of Nevada in the middle of the night. I grew up in southern Nevada, and a big chunk of my family still lives there. And my parents had gotten in a car accident up near Wells, Nevada. And so my brother and his wife had to go up to... Yes, yeah.
I used to live in Las Vegas, too, so...
Oh, did you? Okay, well, yeah, they were going up, I think it was 93, when it goes up through PH, up that way. Mm-hmm. And they were out on the flats and driving along about, I don't know, I think he said it was about midnight. They were going up to try and help my parents out, and his wife was asleep, so she didn't see it, but he saw a string of lights flying going along through the air. And the way he described them, which I'm a little vague now, but I think they're big and round and yellow or something like that. He said at a certain point, they were going along, and all of a sudden they changed direction. But they didn't just change direction. It's like if you saw a row of ducks go along, and then each duck turned off after the others, so it's like a right angle turn, each one following the next one. He said there was no banking, there was no curving around in a turn like you'd see in an aircraft. He said they were... It didn't look like anything he'd ever seen helicopters do. He said they were going along at a good rate of speed, and all of a sudden, one after the other, just literally made a 90-degree turn and went in a different direction. And I found that very interesting, because yeah. what, you know, I have no, and of course the setting was great for this kind of thing, right? But, in my book, I actually tell about another UFO, observation from a friend of mine who, again, is not a UFO buff by any stretch of the imagination. He's an Air Force fighter pilot, in fact. He was, this is during Desert Storm, Desert Shield actually, but in northern Saudi Arabia, he was in a scout helicopter with an army pilot, and they were scouting out telecommunications nodes to post down for their various communications tasks. And they were flying along, and Kent said he saw this shadow tracking across the desert. And he said the shadow was huge, and he knows his aircraft. This guy, you know, he's a career Air Force fighter pilot, right? He knows his aircraft. He said the shadow was huge, and it was very well defined, so it had to be fairly close. But he and the helicopter pilot could not see anything that was casting that shadow. They looked, they plotted where it would have had to be. And he said it was coming at about he would estimate about 1,000 knots. We're talking, you know, afterburner speed for an aircraft. You know?
Yeah, which is trucking.
Yeah, so, exactly. So you know, he could be off because he was in an OH-58 and they were at altitude, you know. But they tried to see the thing casting a shadow, and he said they couldn't see anything. So they were in such a position that they could fly an intercept course with a shadow, and so they did. And just as they approached where the shadow would have tracked past them, it stopped dead. He said there was no deceleration. It just stopped dead. And they're going, what? You know? And then all of a sudden it started again and kept on going. And they're looking at each other, well, what the heck? They saw nothing that cast the shadow. It was going, you know, very rapidly and stopped suddenly and then started suddenly. And it did nothing. Nothing in our inventory or anybody else's that we know of had any kind of capability like that. And so they went off and, you know, completely flummoxed. They went off and did their mission. And as they were coming back, roughly the same area, they saw the shadow coming back the direction that that it had left in. And they watched it go right on out of sight. And Kent is absolutely an excellent observer, and he absolutely has no dogs in any UFO fight. This is completely out of the blue when he told it to me. So I really believe those kind of accounts very strongly.
Can a good remote viewer target one of these craft and figure out who's inside driving it?
The answer is yes, but that's not the whole story. The problem is you don't know whether a remote viewer has done that because you can't get ground truth on it, right? And the problem with remote viewing is sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work. And the times it doesn't work, remote viewers can be subject to I guess what you call, you know, coming up with a fantasy story, right? Something just came into
mm-hmm.
their head.
Yeah, like it gets back to my question earlier about if they tend to believe something. Whether or not that has an effect, I guess it does sometimes.
Yeah, it's interesting. Now, there's another problem with remote viewing that people don't recognize, and that is there's this thing that we call telepathic overlay, for want of a different term, and that is the possibility that the remote viewer may pick up somebody else's mental impressions about what something might be. So the story I've told in the past is kind of like this. Let's say there was a there's somebody who believed very strongly that there was a UFO event, but the UFO event actually never happened. It was just somebody's imagination, right? But this person really believed it and wanted a remote viewer to remote view that event, that so-called event that never happened. So they get the remote viewer, and one thing you have to remember about remote viewing, to do it right, you have to be blind to the target. You cannot know what the target is. And so a remote viewer is kind of helpless in that respect, at the mercy of the tasker, the person that makes the tasking, because...
So it's really not possible to sit down and just ask yourself to find out something, right?
Well, you can do that, but then you can't count on the data. The
mm-hmm.
reason is because if you know what the target is, then everything that you can guess about it, everything you can infer about it, everything you've heard about it, anything you might suspect about it, that's all in your head, along with trying to get the signal, right? And that clouds the information, and so when you do get your information and write it down, sketch it, whatever you're doing, you can never be absolutely sure that what you put down there wasn't just your own left brain guessing rather than actual signal from a target, right? So the cleanest and the most accurate remote viewing is going to be done by a viewer who doesn't know what the target is, but is directed to the target by someone who just has, like I mentioned before, just an arbitrary number that stands for what that target might be that won't telegraph any information to the viewer. And so going back to this UFO tasking, let's say that the event never happened, but the tasker believed it did. And they task this viewer on it. The viewer's blind. They give him a targeting number, and the viewer goes along and starts reporting on this UFO event and describes it just how the tasker thought it was. Well, the tasker thinks that he's got validation from this thing, from the remote viewing, but what all that's happened is that the remote viewer's subconscious went to the target, found out there was no target there, and so went looking for the next most powerful psychic signal line, and it turned out to be, of course, the preconceptions of the person who assigned the target in the first place. And so the subconscious says, okay, well, here's some information about this target, and pulls it out of the subconscious of the tasker, and then reports it back, and the tasker thinks he's been validated when all it was is he got his own story back again. You know? I just got an email from
a guy named Robert Collins in Dayton, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
He's a retired Air Force captain who's written a book about UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been seeing the same UFO in the same area near his house since July 17th of this year. And he says he just saw it again last night at 9:10. And I was just wondering if somebody that has some kind of recurring sighting like this, if remote viewing could help them figure that out.
See, that's a more useful way of applying remote viewing in a setting like this, is if you get somebody who has no opinion on what the thing is, but there is some kind of phenomenon that's been observed, right? There's something mm-hmm. real there. What it is, we don't know, but we know there's something real there. A viewer could be tasked on that, even could be tasked, let's say, 9:10 yesterday, did you say?
Yeah.
Whatever time you said.
Okay, last night, 9:10
okay.
p.m.
So it could be tasked in this way. Describe the event that occurred at 9:10 on, let's see, yesterday, 19 August 2012 at such and such a location. And that could be tasked to the remote viewer in the way you task remote viewers. You wouldn't necessarily give them that kind of information, right? But
when you were working for the military, when you were in the military, and I hope this is not anything that you can't talk about, but maybe it is that the way they task you to find out assignments and things? I mean,
well, no, what they would
say, well, like it, we're going to invade this area, this port, or whatever. I mean, I don't know what the kind of assignments they have.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
What kind of assignments do they give you in the military?
For example, we worked Soviet weapon, new Soviet weapon systems. There might be a report of a new Soviet weapon system inside someplace, and they would task us to describe the interior of a building where they thought there might be some useful information, right, about this. They might test us against an event, such as a Soviet weapons test or a Soviet particle beam weapons test or something like that. They might task us on, and this actually happened, it was before my time, but the remote viewer was asked to remote view in fact, it was Ingo Swan, the guy who invented remote viewing, was asked to remote view a Chinese nuclear test. 3 days before it happened, described what he saw, and he described what he saw, and it indicated that the test was going to be a failure. And it turned out it was, but I just read this story, and I'm a little vague on how it happened. What happened was the Chinese were going to test a nuclear weapon, and it failed, but they were still celebrating, and the reason was because it failed in such a way that they knew that it would have worked had they done it a little bit differently or something like that,
mm-hmm.
right? And anyway, Ingo Swan accurately described the setting, the situation, the event, so that he got correct what it was going to happen. So that's an example. We did the hostage situation in the Middle East, trying to find people like Terry Waite or Colonel Higgins that was...
And that leads me to a question, but if the military is not using it now, or CIA either, I mean, do you think remote viewing might have played a part in locating Osama bin Laden?
Well, that question floats around a lot. At least according to the official story, I'd say probably not. But, you know, you can't rule it out. It's hard to prove a negative. And you know, I don't know. We've done some stuff for the military, I and my little team. But it was not anything like that. We tried to find a soldier that had been kidnapped in a convoy attack back in 2005. And we were asked by the general officer in a major command who had lost the soldier. He asked us to help him find it. It was all pro bono, and it was not classified, although it was sensitive. So it's possible they might have, somebody might have approached some remote viewers to try and help them find bin Laden, you know, and I can't rule it out. I'm not going to try and...
The reason I say that, Lynn Buchanan said he offered one time, and I said no thanks.
Okay, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that before. I'm sorry, you said somebody asked him to do it?
Yeah. No, he asked them if they needed any help.
Oh, and they said no thanks. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would not surprise me at all. Excuse me. Yeah, I would not be surprised that was the reaction it got. Yeah. Yeah,
I want to get to the past lives and future lives and events. I have trouble wrapping my mind around those things. I take you at your word that time and space are not important in remote viewing.
Well, I didn't say
it looks to me like you'd be changing events, especially if you went back in the past. Maybe not. Have you ever done anything from the past?
You would do stuff all the time in the past.
I was asking, you mentioned your religion, that you're a Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering if you'd tried to check on anything in the Book of Mormon or the Holy Bible.
I generally leave faith-based things alone. There are folks who like to play around with those, but...
Yeah, I understand, and I kind of try to leave them alone, too.
Yeah.
Because I have all kinds of people listening.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that somebody would have checked on a lot of things.
Well, some people try.
Here again, I guess there's no proof. Huh? I mean, you take the remote viewer.
That's the problem. And you could get it wrong, right? The remote viewing isn't 100%. You make mistakes, and sometimes you're completely off. And so if you have a faith-based thing, and how do you know whether you got it right or not? You know, you could totally destroy your faith with a false positive, right?
Yeah. If your subconscious plays any role at all in this stuff, it seems to me that if your faith would be one of those things that you wouldn't want to tamper with too much, because you wouldn't know how, because most people have a faith that they're very strong in whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, of course it would be great if you could check all those faith claims, right? You know, if you could go back and find out if Moses really led the children of Israel out of Egypt, or if you could go back and find out if Jesus really was crucified. In fact, I think one guy had on, Courtney Brown, did a project where he claims that remote viewing showed that the crucifixion didn't happen, right, or something along those lines. You know, I just find all that kind of stuff dubious, that approach to remote viewing. And
we had Courtney on with our remote viewing show, and we had a difference of opinion, which we knew we would at the time.
He's
an interesting man, no doubt about it, but he's strong in his viewpoints, and other people are strong in theirs. Somebody wrote me an email about listening to that show, and they said, well, one thing, the remote viewers, they got bigger egos than entertainers.
Well, now think about it. Considering you're doing something that's swimming upstream of society, it takes a pretty big ego to do that, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to say, you know, Courtney is, he's very committed, and he's got a lot of energy, and he's, you know, a lot of ambition to try and, you know, try to do the best he can with the remote viewing stuff. And some of the stuff he does is really good, but... we do have differences of opinion on stuff, and I think that, for example, the Jesus thing, I just, you know, I have doubts about that process. So, But it doesn't mean remote viewing is not a good tool and that he hasn't done good work with it, you know.
Len Buchanan uses a team sometimes on subjects like this. I know he did on the Aztec UFO crash.
Yeah,
12 different remote viewers.
Courtney does too. He doesn't do all the viewing himself or anything like that. I mean, he gets endless other viewers to come in. But and in fact, you're crazy if you try and base everything on a single remote viewer. Although some people can pull it off to some degree. Joe McMonigle, for example, as far as I know, he does all of his viewing individually. You know, just does, he does the viewing himself. But he has gotten so good at it that he's very successful. I mean, he's very successful, and you know, it's hard to gauge anything that Joe does in the remote viewing world, you know, operationally. He does get some things wrong, as everybody does, but his track record is probably the best in the business right now. So,
yeah, we were talking about UFOs a little earlier, and it seems to me, and this is only collateral information because I haven't surveyed every remote viewer. But it seems that many remote viewers are open to the idea of life from other worlds or other places, more than maybe other scientists. And do you think of yourself as a scientist, as a remote viewer?
You know, it all depends. I guess the standard cultural definition of scientist, I don't think I would count as a scientist, at least not as a professional scientist, right? I don't know of any actual practicing remote viewers that would count in that definition. But I think we can do science if we do it properly, right? And I feel like I have done some science. We did a very interesting project trying to determine if a random event generator would detect, I guess to use the term loosely, would detect remote viewing influence, and our indications are that it does, or that it did in our experiment anyway. So, and that was very carefully done, and I count that as a scientific experiment. And I think that
that's what I was referring to. I wouldn't insisting that you're a physicist or something.
Okay.
I mean, you're using the scientific principle. It seems to me
you're
getting things validated.
Yeah, and if you're careful and you follow the scientific method and you follow proper protocols, and I think that there's even amateurs can do really good science as long as they follow the rules, you know. And I think there are those in the remote viewing field who are doing that. So,
is there something you'd like to bring up about remote viewing? I haven't gone to the phones yet, and. The reason is that you and I have had a pretty interesting conversation here and keep getting more questions, you know. So something
yeah,
you'd
I
like
understand.
To bring up?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, is there something you'd like to bring up here?
Not really, not in the amount of time we have left. Probably would be nice to get, if you've got some questions
we can,
out there.
You know, we are clock bound like every radio show, but I've been known to go over, so.
Let me say one thing. So my website, we already gave that out. Folks go to my website. There's actually availability. We didn't get into it, but maybe on a different show we could. Dowsing and remote viewing, because dowsing is a secondary interest of mine when it comes to remote viewing.
Tell me about that for a minute. What you're talking about.
Well, part of the problem with remote viewing, and people, there are two things people always want you to do when they find out you're psychic. They want you to predict the future, or they want you to find something that's missing, right? And ironically, those are the two hardest things for any kind of psychic modality to do, including remote viewing. And there's a whole long story to that, so we probably don't have time for that. But one of the problems was using remote viewing to find things. The best you can do is describe a setting and then hope somebody recognizes it, right? So when we got asked to find a lot of things, like narco trafficking, you know, shipments, hostages in the Middle East, whatever, we were having a tough time with that. And we decided, well, let's try dowsing, okay? And dowsing I like to talk about as being kind of like the inverse of remote viewing. So in remote viewing, understand this is very roughly expressed. Remote viewing, you know where something is, you don't know what it is. In dowsing, you know what it is, but you don't know where it is. So it's like they're kind of just the opposite of each other, and if you can get them to work together, they can kind of fill in each other's weaknesses. And so that's what we did. Yeah. We developed. I'm sorry?
Dowsing seems to have a new legitimacy these days.
Mm-hmm.
People seem to feel pretty good about it.
Yes, and it actually did work for us. But one of the products that I helped produce is a training set. People who want to learn the same lessons we learned in the military unit with dowsing can acquire that set and actually go through a training process and learn a number of the skills that we developed while we were using dowsing in the remote viewing unit. That whole set is on sale, but I wanted to tell people about actually a free product. There's kind of an introductory DVD about dowsing that kind of talks about how dowsing and remote viewing interact. And
how do they get the DVD on your website?
They can go to my website, which is rviewer.com, and there's a banner there towards the top that you click on. It says free DVD, and you click on that. Or you can actually go to freedowsingdvd.com.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's folks like Hal Puthoff, who is the scientist, one of the scientists very involved in this.
Yeah, a man of great reputation.
Yeah.
And he's down there with you, right?
In Austin, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's on the DVD, I'm on the DVD, there's a bunch of other folks on it. But it introduces this idea of remote viewing and dowsing. So, you know, if you're curious, go there. If you really are interested, you could go find the sale. I think it's probably linked from there for the set.
You brought up dowsing, which brings up an important question. I've always wanted to ask remote viewers. I never seem to get around to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to take the time to do this now and ask you. Why couldn't you use remote viewing for treasure hunting, you know, deep sea looking for gold and things like that?
It actually has been and could be. And I get a lot of questions. People want me to help them find treasure, and they say, yeah, if you find it, then I'll give you 10%. I say, why would I do that? Why wouldn't I just find it and keep it all, you know?
Yeah, you keep the 100%.
Yeah, but
well, that was immediately what I thought about, Paul, when you said you had several companies or several things. I thought, well, maybe you got a company that follows these things up.
Yeah. Of course, you know, it has to be done right. You have to be fairly certain that there is a treasure. A lot of times these are speculative. People say, well, I heard this legend that there's some treasure buried somewhere in the whatever, you know. And that's just not worth the trouble, because the odds of finding something like that, even with an enhancement like remote viewing, are fairly slim. And it's a lot of work, frankly. It isn't just, like I said, a magic bullet. Finding things with remote viewing is a lot of darn work, because you have to do it carefully, you have to do it methodically, and so there's got to be a really good chance of payoff before I'm even interested. Yeah. But it has been done. I mean, in a research setting, Stephen Schwartz, who's been involved in this for a long time, used two of the early remote viewers, Ingo Swann, who's legendary, and Hella Hammond.
Yeah, what kind of guy is Ingo? You know him, I guess.
Yeah, he's...
You met him at one time, I mean.
Oh, I've spent a lot of time with Ingo Swann.
Yeah.
I spent almost a good chunk of the entire year of 1984 with Ingo Swann, and of course have visited with him and communicated with him on many occasions since then. Ingo is a very forward-thinking individual. He's not doing well right now. He's having some health problems and stuff. I mean, he is nearly 80. He's almost 80 years old, so he's you know, having some health issues, but you know, he's still a thinker. He's still a source of information, but he was the one that actually developed remote viewing, and then through a whole series of events got together with Hal Puthoff at SRI International, and they ended up developing the program that became remote viewing as we know it today. And he's very interested in a lot of different things, explored a lot of things, but very methodical in his approach, which was those two things are essentially. You had to be open-minded, you had to be intellectually adventurous, and you had to be methodical, too. All of those things had to come together, and they did with Ingo Swann. And he was able to very brilliantly, actually, develop this whole discipline that has essentially, in a certain respect, changed the world.
Very interesting. And what you say about him and a few others is not surprising. And you seem to have those attributes too, Paul. You seem to be able to have an open mind, at the same time be a little methodical.
Well, I try hard. Some people sometimes think I'm a little hard-headed, but...
Well, hard-headed, maybe you really believe in your tenets of whatever it is about what you're doing, and you don't want to get compromised, so that's admirable. Okay, give your website.
rviewer.com, that's rviewer.com. I have a phone number too, which is 866-229-7847, toll free. 866-229-7847.
Okay, and when this interview appears as a podcast on our website, we'll have links to all of that at jerrypippin.com, and people can write us if they need to get a hold of you, if they miss something there, or enter your name, or put they go to that website. It's pretty good. Your website.
Yep. Yep. It's got a lot of stuff on it, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Paul will do another show soon.
Hey, I would love to do that. And I'll tell you, you've been a great host. I appreciate it very much.
It's been interesting. And you just so I understand, you're open-minded to the idea of UFOs and extraterrestrials.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
In fact, you may be a little more than open-minded.
Well, I have to tell you, I am absolutely convinced. But I am cautious. I'm cautious about a lot of the stories. But I am pretty well convinced that there is something there. I've even written a couple articles for UFO Magazine, actually, about UFO and remote viewing. So
right.
I don't know if you subscribe or not, but you might want to check those out.
Okay. Maybe people can look those up, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Excellent.
Thank you very much, Paul.
You bet.
Paul Smith, everyone. And that wraps up our show for tonight. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Jerry Pippin. Until next time, cheers.